Paddy Power, sponsors of the Road to Cheltenham.
Hello everyone, welcome to another On The Road edition of Road to Cheltenham. We're live here from Huntingdon ahead of today's racing, the highlight of which is the M1 Agency Sydney Banks Memorial Novices Hurdle. It features rare edition, but it's not just myself and Ruby Walsh talking to each other in an empty room. We have a live studio audience. Hurrah! Some regular roadies exclusively invited to join us and to throw questions at us during the course of the show. So we're looking forward to your contributions very much during the course of this. And one other minor change, Ruby, analyse this. Rather than put it to the public vote, you've chosen three key points in a race to slow down.
Yeah, there was so much to analyse, Lydia. Obviously, there was a few tactical calls and a few different things went right and wrong, but look, there was too much happened last weekend to just narrow it down to one, so we'll have a look at a few things.
Sounds good. We've got lots to talk about, so we're going to get on with things, and we're going to start straight away with the hurdlers from the Dublin Racing Festival. And we're going to contextualise, first of all, the two-mile hurdlers, and that means looking at the way the race is, the Irish Champion Hurdle, the Tattersalls Novices Hurdle, and the two-mile handicap hurdle won by Gaelic Warrior were run.
Yeah, look, and I suppose a lot of times and sections and everybody's had their say, so we'll try and put a two pictures for you if we can. Stateman is the top in the Irish Champion Hurdle. Bottom left, of course, will be Ilete Tomp winning, but it's Facile Vega in high definition who dominate that. On the bottom right is the handicap hurdle won by Gaelic Warrior, but it's what's available in Efinoch Fizz who bring them along in that race. Now, obviously, from the word go, the novice hurdle is in front and it gets substantially further clear as the race goes on. High definition of Facile Vega rattle down and jump at handicap is second, Irish Champion is third. Skip it on to the second hurdle and it stayed that way. Facile Vega and high definition are pouring it on, but they've gotten a couple of seconds in front of the handicap by the time they get to the second, and the champion is 3 seconds behind. Now it's from the second hurdle to the fourth hurdle that the novice hurdle really builds. When they get to this hurdle where high definition departs, this is where the gap has gotten really, really big, and it's up to almost and over 5 seconds on both screens. Now we've played on to the third last hurdle, and this is the last point you can make it comparable at, because all of these races ran a different track from their home. Facile Vega bypasses the second last, Gaelic Warrior runs through it, Stateman jumped it, but you can still see the gap is quite big at the bottom of the back straight, so Facile Vega didn't get to slow that race as much as he would have liked down the back straight. And when you run it onto the last hurdle, Ilete Tomp jumps it. You're still waiting for Stateman to come. Here he is, and Gaelic Warrior's coming now. But one interesting thing you will notice, Ilete Tomp is really impressive. Stateman does his job. But if you look at Facile Vega falling out of the back of the bottom left shot, he's still going to pass the line in front of Gaelic Warrior on the bottom right.
Mm. And those numbers are the time from three out to the line according to time form, and also the percentage finishing speed. And the closer to 100%, the more efficiently it suggests the race was run, although there can be some differences. Somewhere with a stiff finish like Sandown, for example, would be under 100%. But it suggests that none of those were overly strongly run, and some of them were quite steadily run, including the Irish Champion Hurdle, which is where we're going to start.
Yeah, the Champion Hurdle was definitely steadily run, but there was always a chance that could happen. You didn't have an out-and-out front runner. Paul Townend elected to make it on Stateman's Anna here. Dennis O'Regan had similar thoughts, and Rachel lined up wide on Honeysuckle, but Stateman got in front, and Paul Townend dictated this race then to how he wanted it. Now, the first hurdle, Vauban at the back, he has a grab at the first hurdle. He jumped pretty okay after this, but he does miss the first hurdle. Piper was much more like the horse we expect down the inside in the red colours, but Vauban is lucky to escape with that one. Now the third hurdle, Vauban at the back, he again, Stateman, they're not going quick, lands here and gets quite keen, and Danny has to take him back. Now he pulls him right back behind Dennis O'Regan and goes to the other side of him. The fourth hurdle, Stateman gets half a length on Honeysuckle, and he does the same at the next hurdle, the fifth hurdle. Honeysuckle takes an extra half a stride when she doesn't need to. She's careful rather than exuberant all the way down the back. And at the seventh hurdle, she stumbles on landing, which sent a fair gasp around Leopardstown on Sunday as they race to the second last hurdle. Stateman pings this, and look at the gap he opens on landing. Straight away you can see the daylight appearing to Honeysuckle, and off the bend then Paul Townend has been in control of this race and he keeps going from there home. Now I thought watching it live that here Honeysuckle was going to struggle to be in the first three. I thought she'd finish in front of Zanna here, but I thought Pied Piper and Vauban could get by her. They don't, so she keeps going strongly, but I think Stateman is toying with them off a slow pace. You're kind of hoping he would be, and he's going to face a bigger challenge from here. But it was a very efficient ride, it was a good ride, and the best horse won.
Willie Mullins expressed some surprise that Paul Townend wanted to go from the front, but he controlled that race. And you were arguing this time last week that if you were Rachel, you'd have gone out in front on Honeysuckle.
I probably would have made it whatever I was riding. Right. I would have wanted to have been in control of that race. And I think Paul got it absolutely spot on. I think in a race like that, you might as well have your destiny in your own hands.
And he seems to be going forward all the time. He's a very professional horse, as far as I can see. But he does have the looming monster of Constitution Hill to deal with at the Cheltenham Festival.
Yeah, he does. But I think what we got out of the Irish Champion Hurdle was a horse who can at least go and line up and take him on and have a go. Mm-hmm. I don't know or expect him to be Constitution Hill in what we've seen, but you have one going there that can take him on, and all horses can underperform, as we saw a good bit last weekend. So
yes.
At least you will have one in Stateman lining up to take on Constitution Hill.
I'm going to stick with the horses that are likely to turn up at the Champion Hurdle first before I move back to Honeysuckle. Vauban, he's got to improve his jumping, hasn't he?
Yeah, he was steppy at the first. He was okay after that. But like, he finished just in front of Pied Piper. He was a length in front, or a length or two lengths in front of him last year. Have both or either, are they improving sufficiently? And I heard someone put a very good figure on Juveniles, two older horses last week. Sort of 20 pounds below. Juvenile Triumphs below the standard that's required. And I don't know if either improved enough to win a Champion Hurdle. And there's a reason. There's one five-year-old wins a Champion Hurdle every 10 years. It's a huge gap to bridge.
And had everything gone smoothly for Vauban from the last time we saw him behind Stateman today?
Absolutely everything gone. But Stateman is improving too. People often expected Vauban to improve, but no one factored in that Stateman could improve as well.
Okay, well, let's talk Honeysuckle. Immediately afterwards, there was quite a lot of emotion in the winner's enclosure, and the vibe that everybody was getting there was that they were going to retire her. But actually, come the week, they've had some time to pause and reflect, and they feel that the point you're making, that she stuck on and kept on, there was still some fight, and they just want one final hurrah for the Mayor's Hurdle.
Yeah, look, she was bought as a racehorse primarily, and look, if she happened to be of a different gender, retirement would not be a conversation. So she obviously has a value as a brood mare, and hopefully she will have plenty of foals, but that brings its own risks too. So she's going to run again. I think it looks like she wants to go out and trip. I don't think she's a given to win the Mayor's Hurdle. I think when you put her to Vauban and Pied Piper, and that is reading her form literally, I think she'll face some stiff opposition in that as well. But has she a better chance of winning the Mayor's Hurdle? Most definitely.
Yeah. That zip has gone, hasn't it?
That it has. But she's nine, and we'll get on to different horses. Like, I was probably guilty of forgetting that Appreciator was nine. Mm-hmm. That zip has gone from him too.
Interesting. Okay, we will be talking about Appreciator in a moment. Let's have a look at the Champion Hurdle betting for the Unibet Champion Hurdle. We've also had the forfeits this week. Three were taken out, leaving 14 standing. The three taken out were Bob Ollinger, Nappers Hill and Sir Gerhard, interestingly. This is the only race that Sir Gerhard was taken out of by Willie Mullins.
Yeah, Willie must have had a lapse when he took him out. but primarily, look, all going well, it's a novice chaser. Gerhard will run in, and he left him in the Stayers Hurdle as well. But no, I couldn't see him run. But he's obviously not going to run the Champion Hurdle.
We should mention that Zanna here, there, who you just saw in the Irish Champion Hurdle, is a 40-1 shot this time round. He's been disqualified by the British Horse Racing Authority for testing positive for a banned race day substance when finishing third in the Champion Hurdle last season. Right, let's move on and have a look at the Close Brothers David Nicholson Mayor's Hurdle betting. And this, I think, Ruby, reflects what you were saying in many ways. Honeysuckle is the 7-4 favourite, but there's a load of horses there. Marie's Rock, for example, the title holder, but she also has an entry in the Stayers. Brandy Love, who we haven't seen yet. Epitant, who by Clerical Air has to be supplemented. And Love Envoie as well.
Yeah, and Echoes and Rain, and she wears a well, Queen's Brook. Obviously, Tell Me Something Girl might have been going back here. Could you see her taking on Honeysuckle, same ownership, same trainer? Maybe not, but I think that's a really competitive mare's hurdle. Everyone has their gripe about it. Some people don't like it, some people do. I think it's a really competitive race, and do I think any of those could win any other race at the Cheltenham Festival? I would be surprised if they did.
It is taking away from the Champion Hurdle, though, isn't it? If there wasn't a choice, Epatante and Honeysuckle, well, potentially Honeysuckle,
yeah,
but certainly Epatante would be winning.
If you're of the mentality that you like eight runners to have an each-way bet, you would have more runners and you could be picking something to finish third. I don't think you need either any of those to make the Champion Hurdle a better race, because the two geldings are superior and I think they will dominate the race. So from an each-way point of view, to add depth numbers, they're not there. Will they make it a better race? No.
Okay.
In my opinion.
I think they add substance to the race. I think that's quality.
Maybe to read form, to give you a guide afterwards so you can give a horse a better rating, something like that, possibly. As regards making a competitive race, I think both have regressed. I don't see them. Admirable, love it, watch them, great, clap them in the finish third. If you own them, you want to try and win something.
You think Epatante's regressed?
I do, yeah.
Go on.
I do. I think she's fallen. I think she is like Honeysuckle, has come back a little bit. She dominated mares at Doncaster last week, but she didn't ever look like landing a blow against Constitution Hill. She mightn't be as good as him, but she didn't look like winning either of those races from the fourth last hurdle home.
Okay. 18 stand after the forfeits for the Mayor's Hurdle. As I mentioned, there's one due to be supplemented. Six were taken out, nothing of particular note. And if we look ahead to this Saturday at Warwick, we've got Love Envoi running. She's very much kept to the calendar that her trainer, Harry Fry, has mapped out for her. She faces six rivals on that occasion. She's been going well this season.
Yeah, she's been impressive. She was quite keen this day in Sandown. And, you know, if she'd settled better, wouldn't have come off the bridle. She obviously won the Novice Hurdle at Cheltenham last year. Went to Ferry House and wasn't quite good enough for Brandy Love, but Brandy Love had skipped Cheltenham. So look, this mare is progressing. She's won a handicap, she's going the right direction, and she's a runner.
Okay, so we also need to bring you up to date with the Paddy Power Stayers Hurdle betting and some news lines as well, but let's have a look at the betting first off. Tehupo is the favourite at 5-2, home by the Leaf 4-1. Gold Tweet, the French raider who won the Cleve, who has to be supplemented, but Gabriel Leander seems to be suggesting that the horse definitely will be. He's 4-1. Now, there's Blazing Cal at Leopardstown on Saturday. Charles Burns, his trainer, was saying it's getting a bit late in the day for Cheltenham, but he is entered in the Boyne Hurdle, and we'll have a look at that in a moment. Flooring Porter's there at 5-1 as well, and Gavin Cromwell was making more positive noises at Leopardstown on Saturday, saying the recent scan results are positive. He's back riding, he's done some swimming, and he hasn't lost too much fitness. Previously, he'd said he was 50-50 for Cheltenham, and I asked him whether he was now 60-40 or 70-30. He declined to put a number on it, but certainly he confirmed he was more positive than he was. And in his quotes in a stable tour on Monday, Ruby, Willie Mullins implied that Classical Dream had some kind of setback. No details were available, but the sense of the sentence seemed to suggest that.
Yeah, he obviously didn't run at Christmas. He hasn't run in the Galmoy either, so he haven't seen him since he chased home Tehupo and was in front of Honeysuckle. So he is riding out. I saw him on, I think the stable tour saw him on Monday. I did see him on Tuesday. As to why he hasn't run, I'm not sure.
Okay. 25 stand for the Paddy Power Stayers Hurdle, with one due to be supplemented, Gold Tweet. Three were taken out at this stage, including Julian Obello and Monkfish. We'll return to Monkfish later in the show as well. Let's have a look at the entries for the Boyne. Good to see Blazing Cal there. Charles was saying that it hinged, whether he got even to this race, hinged on a piece of work on the Sunday. So at least that must have been positive enough. But it is getting late in the day, Ruby.
Yeah, it is. But is it? I mean, if he's happy with his build-up and the amount of work he's doing, Penn Hill did win the Stayers Hurdle first time out. And yeah, he probably lacks a bit of experience, Blazing Cal, but he's a good horse. Maybe he'll run Sunday. St. Sam is in there as well. Bit of pace in that race because he gallops along in front. So, yeah, it'll be a good race, that Boyne Hurdle.
How did you rate Blazing Cal when you saw him last season?
I thought he was a very decent novice. But it's that long since we've seen him. He's obviously had an injury, and like every horse that's had an injury, have they progressed or regressed after it?
Okay. Right, so those are the fully fledged hurdlers. We're going to move on to the novice hurdlers, while those split screens that we started the show with are fresh in your mind. And we're going to have another look at the Tattersalls Irish novice hurdle, which saw the eclipse of Facil Vega, but a very good performance in victory for Millet Eton.
Yeah, you can't look away from that. I mean, and you've good horses behind them. Down the inside is Dark Raven, on the outside is Rachel on In the Pocket, and Irish Point. Look how far back Irish Point is here, and David Russell is not following. Now, this is the part of the race that I think got too hot. Facil Vega and High Definition are really taking each other on, and Eilat de Tom drops back, but Danny even drops back behind Rachel Blackmore in the green and white, and Davy Russell's body language and Daryl Jacobs suggest that they are not following this pace. It got really hot around that bend in Leopardstown down to this next hurdle. You can see Paul is trying to slow Facil Vega, but he's losing that fight, and High Definition departs here. Having said that, look, he's just unlucky and JJ gets unseated. He stumbles and he's gone and gravity takes over. But like, Irish Point's a decent horse, but look at the gap between them. Next hurdle, In the Pocket makes a... He was good at that one. Facil Vega put down, sorry. And Eilat de Tom grabs at that hurdle. None of those jumping was spectacular. Right? In the Pocket missed there. But it's from here, when you see Danny getting onto the back of Paul Town, and Facil Vega, the reins never stiffen. He's empty at that stage, because when he heard the other horse coming to him, he should have come alive to go again, but he doesn't. He fades off the bend, and Danny is travelling really, really well. Dark Raven comes to have a go at him, but Eilat de Tom quickens up and flies the last. And it was a really good performance. A good performance on the clock, Lydia, and it's a good performance visually.
I'm going to move on to Facil Vega in a moment, but I think we should start with the winner, who had chased home Facil Vega last time they encountered each other. He's a keen sort. Willie was talking about his mistake at the very first hurdle. What did you make of that performance?
Yeah, his jumping hasn't been spectacular. It wasn't great in Thurles. It wasn't great in Leopardstown the last day. It was better on Sunday, and it will hopefully get better. But he's a slow learner in that department. Mm-hmm. He's had plenty of runs.
Well, he's a second season novice, isn't he? He ran as a juvenile.
Yeah.
Really promised at this meeting, in fact.
He did, and was quite keen, but he's definitely becoming more manageable, but he does need to improve, and he's getting there, but he's a slow learner with his jumping.
And where do you see In the Pocket, Dark Raven, Irish Point going? Irish Point clearly needs to go up and trip, doesn't
he? Yeah, but he went up and tripped in the Lawlers, and then looked like he wanted to come back and trip, so maybe, you know, he's caught between the rock and the hard place. I see it at the Tump in the Supreme, Dark Raven. They're just behind him, aren't they?
So let's go through what happened in the immediate aftermath of Facil Vega. Willie Mullins said of Paul Townend that he rode him, he needs to ride him like a racehorse, not a machine. Paul Townend said he felt that the pace, early pace, did contribute to his defeat, but it didn't add up to him being beaten that far. And this week, Willie Mullins has reported that Facil Vega was quite sore. He was fine this morning. Well, he's getting better, so I think he'll be all right. How do you add up all of that and decide what you think?
You think any horse, or a lot of horses, when they go to the well, like obviously Facil Vega did, would be a bit stiff and sore after. That wouldn't necessarily concern me. And he's going to have... Well, he would have usually an easy week after a race, especially a hard race like that. So does he miss any time or prep or anything? No. And Willie said he was getting better, so we'll take him on his word on that one. Does the early pace completely add up to his poor performance? I think it is the biggest factor anyway. I think the speed they went. I do. From the third hurdle to the fourth hurdle, when you watched Eilat de Tom, who was keen, drop off, I think that section there... And then if you watched him against the champion and the handicap, where Paul never got him slowed enough to re-energise, if you want to put it a better way, from after running a really hard section, he never got slow enough to get that energy back. And then Danny got on his boot and didn't allow him from the third last. But I think it was the biggest factor, yeah.
Okay, we might come back to this subject. But first of all, we've got a question from James about Facil Vega. Where you go with your question, James?
Yeah, so I was at Leopardstown at the weekend and you could hear a pin drop when Paul and Facil Vega just went back through the field. It was terrible. But Ruby, can you just explain a little bit more about the lameness? Is that a big concern? And if you've got a nice juicy slip for Facil Vega in the Supreme, should you be worried? Or?
Of course you would prefer if it wasn't. But would I be overly concerned? No. And it wasn't. Willie said he was lame yesterday. He was good, better this morning. You would have hoped he was better again today. And he wouldn't be doing much this week anyway. He won't be doing much for the next 10 days. He'll only be, like all the horses, trying to freshen back up to start their prep into Cheltenham. So, of course, you would love never to throw a lame step, but lots of horses do, and I wouldn't be worried about the timing.
Okay. How juicy is the slip?
Sorry, say it again.
How juicy is the slip? What price have you got?
Oh, I think I'm on at sixes, I think. But yeah, it's just one of those ones. As soon as he crossed the line, I said, I hope something comes alight and that wasn't his true running, because if not, the bubble has been burst. But if it is just the lameness and it's back to the machine that we all think he is, hopefully it's a straightforward one to get us off to a flyer on the Tuesday. But fingers crossed, Ruby.
You can't drop out information like that. I'm always going to ask.
Yeah, that's
I'm just naturally nosy. It's an advantage for this job. I think it's kind of a combination of things. I mean, how tamely Letitom went past him, you know, how tame he was when Letitom went past him. He clocked a good time over Christmas. You know, he's capable of going a good pace. So I kind of, a bit like James, kind of welcomed, not for the horse, obviously, that there was more of an excuse to what happened.
Yeah, I don't think he ran as fast early at Christmas. And then when he did sort of run with Paul past the stands or in much the same place, Paul let him go. Whereas this time they were running hard. It looked to me like Paul was trying to get him back. So he's running and Paul is pulling and you're burning even more energy. I think that's the biggest factor. Now, I didn't quite get over the furore about Willie saying it, because having worked for him for 20 years, when Willie actually is annoyed, he goes to the car park. He doesn't even come to the parade room. And the fact that, I'd say, when Paul walked in and saw Willie there, he knew that whatever he says is not going to be too bad, because right. If you know Willie, he goes home when it gets bad.
Okay, note to self. Two further questions about Fassel Vega. His action is quite extravagant, is it? Is that going to be limiting in terms of ground?
I don't know about ground, but it would always be in the back of your head as regards keeping him sound. No, not to add up to what's wrong with him now, but it is so exuberant, and he does come down from a height every time his front feet hit the ground. It's very exuberant, yeah. But he's always been that way.
Of course. And is 2 miles his trip?
Well, he's out of a 3 miler, or 2.5 mile mare, and sure, grade one wins were at 3 miles, so stamina won't be a problem to him. But I didn't think he lacked pace the other day. I think, if anything, they had too much pace.
Okay. Right, let's have a look at the impact on the Sky Bet Supreme Novices Hurdle. He did wander out a bit, but these Paddy Power prices now have him as 5-2 favourite ahead of Imper et Pass at 3-1. That's his stable companion that William Mullins seems to be leaning towards the Ballymore. Marine Nationale, what a story for Barry Connell, who's got 2 leading hopes in 2 grade ones at the Cheltenham Festival. This is one of them, the Royal Bond winner at 7-2. And Letitom himself, whose very good performance has perhaps been slightly overlooked. But we're going to have a chat about Diverge, who isn't on that list. And this is part of the novice hurdling form that we were saving from last week. This was quite an impressive performance.
We put too much in the show and
yeah,
we ran
out.
Yeah,
we did.
Yeah, look, here he is in Punchestown. Stellion made the running and he sat second. He's by Frankel. It was his debut over hurdles. He jumps to the front at the fourth hurdle under Paul. This was last Monday week at Punchestown. And from 3 out to the line, he starts to quicken up. It's a run of the mill maiden hurdle. You would want to see a horse doing this, but I like the manner in which he did it. He was really quick away from 3 out. He's the same again away from the second last hurdle. He jumps this and away he goes again, even kind of comes out of Paul's hands. Stellion makes a very bad mistake, but I thought he showed a lot of speed and a lot of pace. Moncour has come from well back to run into second here. I think Moncour runs today at Thurles, I'm really sure it does. And I liked what Diverge did. He does stay, he's plenty of pace. Look, he's a big price in the Supreme and he has to step a long way forward, but I thought that was a pleasing debut.
He's the kind of horse that Willie Mullins is known to run in the, I mean, he's quite happy to run quite a few in the Supreme, and he does run in experienced horses, isn't it?
Oh, he does. I could see him lining up, yeah, no problem.
And was the different tactics important as well? He'd been 6 behind high definition at Leopardstown over Christmas. Here, he was more positively ridden.
Yeah, I'd say just improved from Christmas. I'd say fitness-wise, everything. I'd say he just came forward. Plenty of horses did. In Excess came forward from a run in Limerick. Diverge came forward from the run in Punchestown. Parminion, who we'll see behind, found a 50. He may have come forward, but not quite as much.
Well, this is really impressive. Let's take a look at found a 50. I mean, wow.
Yeah, and this is strong form. Obviously, you have Parminion, Tagman, who finished second to Goodland at Christmas and found a 50 in front. And David Russell let this horse stride along. You can see the stretch from first to last as they head up to Ballyhack. They jump the second hurdle, climbing away from the stands. Over to the third last, he's gone a solid gallop and there's still a long stretch on him. And it's the horse in blue, Tagman, and Parminion in the Joe Mary Donnelly colours were 2 horses with big reputations. But found a 50, jumps the second last and starts to quicken. And again at the last hurdle, he's quickening all the way to it, jumps it well and goes away to win strongly. He'd been disappointing the time before, found a 50 and finished weakly, but this was a really good performance on very testing ground.
It really was. Well, it's possibly a bit strong, but I was very taken with this. Not entered at Cheltenham, so if we see him, it might be something like Punchestown.
Yeah, he could go to Nace the day before the Cheltenham Festival and then back to Ferry House in Punchestown with the route Flamebearer probably went last year. It's open to a lot of horses too.
Okay. The next one is a viewer request. This is Strong Leader. We've been asked by two roadies to talk about his success. He carried a double penalty to victory at the end of January at Southall.
Yeah, look, he's 3-3 over hurdles. He beat Ballybawn at Southall. Father Jazz made the run and he was very, very impressive. Yeah.
That's as much as you're going to say. Fine.
There's no VT, and I mean, if the roadies watch it themselves, they can form their own opinion.
They can indeed, they can indeed. That horse trained by Ollie Murphy, he's also got Chasing Fire. We do have evidence of Chasing Fire. This is him running at Sandown. That's not him highlighted.
No, though. That's it called
Dolly Vart,
yes. Yeah. Getaway Drumlee on the outside. Strong enough gallop here. Harry slowed it down the back, and Aidan Coleman jumps up on Chasing Fire at the fourth. Sixth hurdle, he lands almost upside, or maybe fractionally in front, but he was in no rush on him then. He hung on to him, Aidan Coleman did. Second last, he asked him to go about his business. Jumps it well and gets into a ding dong with Olivia Ovilate. And he goes right at the last.
That right.
It goes very right at the last, but he stayed at it well, and he won impressively.
He did. You said earlier in the series that it's quite hard to be impressive at Sandown. Constitution Hill, obviously, the
exception.
Yeah.
It is. It is hard to build speed from the back of the last hurdle at Sandown. Most horses slow down considerably, as you said, about percentage times from the last hurdle home or last fence home. But I thought, without looking at the percentages, that horse managed to at least maintain it.
He is quite a good horse, I think. He looks like he might be a chaser in time. Ollie Murphy was saying afterwards that he's had a couple of placed horses in the Supreme. He didn't sound that necessarily bothered about going to Cheltenham. It could be Aintree that we see him at.
Yeah, maybe he will, or maybe he's thinking of going there with Strong Leader and he's keeping Chasing Fire for something else.
Mm-hmm. Could be. We've got some interesting action in the novice hurdle division here at Huntingdon today, so let's have a look at the declarations and the betting, rather, for the Sydney Banks Memorial. Rare Edition, who we've been a fan of on Road to Cheltenham. He is the 5-6 favourite. He carried a double penalty to victory at Kempton on Boxing Day. Ginny's Destiny, who was second in the Leamington, is 100-30. And I'm quite interested in Marble Sands, even, who I think did too much in the Challow. That horse now into 6-1. How do you see this?
I think the favourite will win. I think I've been impressed with him. I thought he was very impressive at Doncaster. I thought he was very good at Kempton on Boxing Day. Yeah, I'd be with him all the way.
OK, well, let's see what he manages to do for Charlie Longson and Sam Twiston Davis. Let's have a look at the Ballymore betting as well. Hermes Allen is joint favourite now with Paddy Power with Ampere et Passe at 11-4. Facil Vega's there at 7-2. Interesting. And Gaelic Warrior is 4-1 and also Good Land. Now, those two horses are the ones that we're going to take a look at in a moment now. We'll start with Gaelic Warrior again. Just refer you back to that split screen we showed you earlier in terms of his handicap hurdle performance.
Yeah, and he sits in right. He's a fraction clumsy at the first hurdle. What's available, neck fillock, fizz go along in front. But you can see him at the second, right. Gets outside what's available. Paul Townend switches him back inside. Bit straighter at the third hurdle. Tax for Max is directly behind him. He's very brave here at the fourth. Paul's going to go in. He lets fly. He saw Paul's hands up to slow him, but he didn't. Seventh, right. When he gets in short, he goes right. When he has to get in and take another stride, it's very right. Quickens up well off the home turn, and then when he's on his own in front, he heads for the grandstand here at the last turn. So, like, going right is definitely an issue for him. And some whoever rides him at Cheltenham, Paul may ride him, may not, with the options he'll have in those races. But he will need cover, and someone's going to have to go down the inside and keep 1.5 length in front of you.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult, isn't it? Paul Townend, in an interview with Nick Luck afterwards, was suggesting maybe they could do something at home to address it. Do you think there's anything that can be done? It looks like an inveterate habit to me.
It's a preference for him, and it's what he wants to do, but there's always Punchestown.
True.
If he happens to go right at Cheltenham and throw it away, he can go back to Punchestown, and there's plenty of good novices there too.
William Mullins leading towards the Ballymore with Gaelic Warrior. Again, I mean, we've talked about it so many times, but the old course, you know, tightly turning.
Yeah, well, he's hardly going to run him in the Albert Bartlett, so it's old course, whatever he does, Supreme or Ballymore, isn't it?
Unless it was handicap, which seems unlikely now after a performance like
43, 53, what handicap he'd run in Martin Pipe, he'd probably be above the bracket for that. It's mm-hmm. 150, isn't it? It was a 155.
County,
possibly. Top weight on a novice, wouldn't think so.
No. No. Anyway, he is leaning towards the Ballymore. Any thoughts on Willie Mullen's shuffling of his pack? I mean, I know he leaves it to the last minute, quite rightly, and we're all used to that. But do you have any view about horses, you personally, about horses that should go
where? I wouldn't take Gaelic Warrior as a given in the Ballymore. You know, it'll depend on what Paul is going to ride and what other owners have and what way they're working. So, like, I'd say let the dust settle.
Do you personally have a strong view, though, about any of them?
You'd have to look at the opposition as well. What paces in races, what races are going to be run that may suit horses, may not suit horses. I do think you need one with a turn of foot, though, to win the Ballymore.
I agree. Let's have a look at the Nathaniel Lacey on that note, which was won by Goodland, who does have pace.
He does. Michael O'Sullivan rode him. The English horse, we've all been caught booked out to make it. Down the inside was key to Paris. And a couple of horses that were disappointing here, but Goodland, he's quite keen early. And Mikey gets him well enough settled by the time he gets to the third. But they are tightly bunched. And Mikey gets onto Sam Twist and Davis's tail and just stays behind him as best he can. Now, Cool Survivor's at the very back of the shot here under Brian Cooper. And he was flat to the boards all the way. But he does run on late in the day. Down the back straight centre, Clegane gets a little bit high. But again, you can see Mikey, when he lands beside Sam, he takes back behind him. Every time he gets close to him, he pulls back. He wasn't helping force the issue, for we've all been caught. He was riding this horse like he had plenty of speed and he had plenty of gears. Grace Clare West was struggling at the back of the third last hurdle. I think Deep Cave has run well. The one that stays on was Davy Russell on the Jigginstown horse, or the
Cool Survivor.
No, not the Jigginstown horse, the Rob Core horse in the middle.
Absolute Notions.
I thought here Absolute Notions was coming to have his chance, but to be fair to Goodland, he finds plenty, and I think Cool Survivor could end up a runner in the Albert Barton the way he's come up.
Yeah, he was just taken out of his comfort zone and making mistakes, wasn't he? But he's really stuck to his task quite nicely, and also Absolute Notions keeping on. It was a ride of huge maturity for Mikey O'Sullivan.
It was, but you could see watching it why Barry Connell doesn't have him in the Albert Bartlett. Mm-hmm. He was keen enough there at 2 miles and six, and you can see why he's coming down and trip with him.
Definitely. So that's two grade one rides for Mikey O'Sullivan, who's talking about his Cheltenham experience. He has quite a bit of it. He thinks four or five rides over hurdles. And of course, he was a Cheltenham Festival winner last season. Any others to take out from there? Sandok again,
yeah,
kind of.
Definitely, but got a bit high a couple of times. I think if he comes down and jumps a bit more through the air, he'll definitely help his chances.
Kind of flattened out at the end, didn't he?
He did.
Grade Clare West was one of the ones that Willie Mullins also reported had ended up a bit sore, a bit lame. And Key de Paris seems to just be a bit weak.
Yeah, but I think Key de Paris' Thurles form, or not Thurles, Tremor form, didn't really entitle him to be the price he was.
No, absolutely not. The British Raider, we've all been caught.
He had to do the donkey work and looked like he wanted a good bit further. And didn't get much help. Michael O'Sullivan was in control of it and he kept taking back behind Sam. I'd say Sam would have loved if something had got beside him and helped drag it, but the race built and it didn't suit him.
I know he went forward when he went at Cheltenham, but he's still sort of wandering going into his hurdles. I wonder whether he'd want a bit more cover, and making his own running doesn't really help him.
No, but he wasn't going to win a slowly run race either, so
no.
You have to try something.
No, of course, it wasn't a criticism, it was just an observation.
No, I thought it was.
Always stirring. Right, that segues to Rock My Way's win in the Ballymore Classic, because Rock My Way push, we've all been caught all the way to the line when they met early in the season at Cheltenham.
Yeah, Henry II in the green and red on the outside here was good and prominent in this race, and down the inside, I thought Tom Scoo always had Rock My Way in a good position towards the inside of the track, and he wasn't afraid to make use of them. They did quicken up a long way from home in this race. It's a bit peculiar, the horse on the outside, Henry II, you have odd head carriage at times. Even here, it was off to the side, and obviously then you had Pembroke travelling really well for Harry Skelton in the maroon with the navy cap. I'm not sure Pembroke really got home, and Rock My Way dragged the stamina out of him, but for an inexperienced horse, Rock My Way is really going the right direction, and he stayed really strongly. What sort of a horse he becomes, only time will tell. Obviously, we've all been caught, didn't exactly frank the form, but I would have thought Rock My Way improved from Cheltenham the first day, New Year's Day, to Cheltenham on Trials Day, and Pembroke wants to go back and trip.
Yeah, I agree with both of those statements. I think the Farsa in the orange and black as well bounced back to the kind of form that he'd shown early in the season. And yeah, Henri II was a little bit odd, wasn't he? The hanging and head carriage and
green and
what did you make of the proximity of the Irish Raider, Dr. Brown Bear?
he was proximity down the hill. He's obviously well enough exposed. But I suppose if you're a literal form reader, you would have looked at that and wouldn't have surprised you how we've all been caught ran then. Yeah. And then Nathaniel Lacey.
Well, I just wondered whether it didn't bode well for the comparative form on either side of the Irish Sea. But it could be that he was suited by going up and trip and getting a strongly run race.
Definitely. And I think the winner, to be fair to him, is a horse that will improve again and could improve for a long time, actually.
Yes. And he's going for the Albert Bartlett, as I understand it. Sid Hosey, relatively an experienced trainer. He had a number of trainers training for him. And then he decided he was going to do it himself. And this is the biggest success of his nascent career so far, and that horse looks like a chaser in time, I think. We need to talk about the River Don that was run the same day over 3 miles at Doncaster. It was won by Maximilian.
Yeah, and it was a good, tough performance. I thought the horse in the middle, Stay Away Faye, probably got tight enough from going to the last, and then Hurricane Boy down the outside. But yeah, good performance from the winner, Maximilian.
Yes,
Maxi Milan, I was calling him. Maximilian, and Stay Away Faye is still a good horse.
Yes, I agree. Was a little bit crowded as his hurdles in the straight, and Hurricane Bay on the left-hand side in that picture, perhaps pressed on a little bit soon. I'd be interested in all three of them in different circumstances. Let's have a look at the betting, shall we? For the Albert Bartlett, I should have said. Embassy Gardens and Hidden Valley Lake are the 9-2 joint favourites ahead of three-card Bragg, and Hermes Elan is still in there. Corbett's Cross, your anti-post tip for the race, is now 6-1, moving markets. Let's move on to the mares, shall we? We go back to the Dublin Racing Festival for our first piece of evidence. There was a mares handicap hurdle that opened proceedings on the Sunday, and I was particularly interested in the second and the fourth, Historic Reconce and Liberty Dance, respectively.
Yeah, and so was I. And look, Historic Reconce had a great position down the inside, just behind the pace, very early. Liberty Dance was further back on the Davy Russell blue with the light green sleeves. Look, Liberty Dance, I thought it was a good performance tomorrow. She'd plenty of weight probably in a handicap with relatively little experience. Same for Historic Reconce, who gets a great run through towards the inside and the approach to the last when Liberty Dance has to come around. I think both mares will improve for the run. Now eventually Historic Reconce gets a bit tight at the last hurdle when Ballyball Banter even drifts in midair. But I think there's plenty to take out of it. If you're looking and thinking historically, Liberty Dance probably reminds you a little of Tell Me Something Girl, mm-hmm. coming through this race, arriving with a chance and then not quite getting home, like she would improve her fitness. And the race she was ridden, she will have gained a hell of a lot of experience. Down the inside, behind a wall of horses, she will have learnt a lot.
Yeah, I agree with that. I was also quite taken with Historic Reconce because she was shuffled back as they bypassed the hurdle as well. So she wasn't, although she started off towards the fall, which I think was an advantage for her positioning, her shuffling back meant she wasn't that far ahead of Liberty Dance.
At yeah. that point of the race.
Yeah. So I think she can build on that. And she is a half-sitter to Jacques and Passoir, having won a maiden at Tremor last August. Let's have a look back at the Solarina next. This was won by Ashro Diamond. Now, what did you make of this race?
I thought it was a steadily run affair, and that probably didn't suit the mare in front, Halka de Tarbart. She went a good gallop early, Jatara, Ashro Diamond. But you can see Davy there, he's in front. Now, she was jumping to her left, so I'm not sure, was she hanging left and going left, and therefore he was always pulling her back with his right rein? I think that's what it was. You can see she does go to the middle of the track, but she's a strong stayer. Danny gets in a pocket here in Ashro Diamond. C'est la vie fades in the orange and black. She gets through outside Jatara. I thought it was a really good performance from Ashro Diamond. I think a stronger gallop will suit Halka de Tarbart, and I thought Jatara ran really well. Obviously Ashro will have a penalty now at Cheltenham because this was a graded race, but I think it was a bit stop-start.
It was. Danny Mullins seemed to embrace the gap, didn't he? Relying on her turn of foot.
Yeah, he did, but he was riding her that
embrace
way in testing
pocket,
ground.
Sorry.
Yeah,
embrace the pocket.
But he was riding her that way, mm-hmm. and he was riding for a bit of luck, and he got her, and she has a good turn of foot. But it was a steadily run race. But the more I watched it, the more I thought it was because Halka de Tarbart was hanging.
Right, that's interesting, because I felt that, you know, she'd have done much better if it had gone able to go a bit faster, but that might explain why.
I think that's why.
C'est la vie, disappointing?
She was disappointing. She'd come from well off the pace at Punchestown, but stepped up in grade, was disappointing.
Okay. Right, let's talk about Princess Zoe, the Group 1 winner on the flat, made her debut over hurdles at the age of 8, and she was nabbed on the line by Ladybank.
She was, jumped out pink in the park down her inside with a decent gallop, jumped to the front. Now, she was quite keen as well, away from the third hurdle. You can see with Danny, he's trying to slow her down. Her jumping was okay, it was a first run, so it's going to be a work in progress for her. Fifth hurdle, Danny gave her a squeeze, she changed her mind and put down. Three out then, the race got quite tightly bunched. She's brave at the third last, and at the second last then, she's long and quick at it, which was really good. But the mare behind her, Ladybank, then comes at her. Danny slows her to the last, Ladybank jumps it better. Now, Danny slowed, Rachel drops her whip, so it's 6-1, half a dozen here, don't know which one would have won. But Tony Mullins is really pleased with her. She'll improve for it, for the experience, but I think she has to.
I agree. She battled really well. I felt that given the way that Ladybank was responding to the stick from Rachel Blackmore, that might have made the difference. But
and you could argue the toss, if Danny kept going to the last, she might never have got there. So I think they were both happy to get a dead heat out of that one.
Let's have a look at the Ryanair Jack de Bromhead Mares Novices Hurdle Betting. This is the Grade 2. Lucia is joint favourite with Ashro Diamond at 5-2. I think Ashro Diamond should be outright favourite for this. I know she's got the penalty, but even so.
Yeah, Lucia was very good. We haven't seen her since Newbury, though, and she was very good on that occasion. Liberty Dance was good. Lot of Joy was very good yesterday. So, look, competitive race.
It is. Right, so those are the novices. We're going to move on to the juveniles next. And it's natural to start with the Donoghue Marquis Spring Juvenile, which was won by Gala Massot, but there was a chamozzle up the inside.
There was a chamozzle. Jorda Fett and Sinsa jumped out in front. Lossie Mouts in the box seat, Gala Massot aside her. Now, if you watch away from the third hurdle, Gala Massot gets keen again. She grabs and Danny slips his reins on landing. Now, he has to change his hands, and that's a signal to go, and it lights Gala Massot up, and she gets running with him down over the third hurdle, and she's still running with him going to the fourth hurdle. Now, in front was Jorda Fett in the green cap. You can see clearly the gap inside her. He's jumping right and is leaving a nice gap for Lossie Mouth on the inside. That's at the fourth. Fifth hurdle is there as Gala Massot gets keen again. But when they get to the sixth hurdle, Danny has gone forward. Jorda Fett misses. Now, Paul is banking on the gap on the inside, but Danny knows he is. And Danny in the blue, as Jorda Fett misses, slips up in the blue colours, shoves Jack in, and Paul is stuck in the pocket.
It was a masterful move from Danny Mullins. He rode like a demon, didn't he, all weekend?
Yeah, but that's race riding, that's how you do it. But that wasn't the end of it for Paul Townend, because when they get across to the second last hurdle in the yellow and purple colours is Sean O'Keefe. As he goes to change his hands here, he drops his rein, drifts into Ascending, who drifts into Lossie Mouth and sends her into Fox Rock. So, when it's going bad, it just gets worse. and then you start chasing it. And, you know, Paul is here thinking, oh my God, how do I get myself out of this? And when you're then, what do you do? You try even harder, and that's what he did. Mm.
Okay, let's deal with Lossie Mouth first before we go back and give Gala Massot her due deference, because she runs all the way to the line. Lossie Mouth can't quite get to her. Afterwards, Willie Mullins said, and I quote, "I'm worried this will leave a mark. I'd have been happier if Paul maybe had just ridden hands and heels. The writing was on the wall, so what was the point of hitting her?" Surely.
I often got that too. but when you're as competitive as Paul Townend is, you just can't turn it off. He was always going to do that and do exactly what he did. But look, Willie's looking at it from a trainer above in the stand, and he's thinking, that's going to win and you're beaten. Paul Townend is on Lossie Mote's back thinking, how do I win? So you're looking at it from a different mindset.
Yeah, and the jockey has to be trying to win. I mean, he was on the 1-3 favourite. He was shuffled back only three, just after three out. He was only 3.5
Willie's
lengths
behind.
Willie's
arguing the result would be the same, whatever Paul did. So you can see his argument, but I can also see why Paul Townend did what he did and will continue to do what he did.
It's an imponderable how much it might leave a mark, isn't it?
It is, but that's a trainer talking again, and that's the way trainers see it, and that's what he's thinking about the future. I'm thinking about the next day. So, yeah, look, Gala Massot has improved, but a strongly run or a better run race with a better run, you would have to think Lossie Mouth was unlucky. I think she was.
I think she was probably unlucky. But the thing I think I learned was that Gala Massot has improved quite a bit from when they last met. She was receiving £3. She was £3 worse off, wasn't she, against Lossie Mouth this time around. And she's still got some things to learn. She was still very gassy in that race. You've explained why that was. But
yeah, she was gassy. And maybe in Cheltenham, stronger run race. Maybe it won't be stronger. We don't know. I haven't studied that. But yeah, they're good. They're good juveniles. Mm. Decent juveniles anyway.
Takao, first time Hood back in third.
Definitely helped him settle, ran a really strong race, but he's a bit behind the fillies, isn't he?
He was, and Mark Walsh seemed to accept that, didn't he, going into the last, as Lossie Mouth eventually went past and Gala Massot had gone.
Yeah, and he's kept in front of the others and rode to be, well, finished where he could.
Yeah, absolutely. So you'd be thinking that the Poodle's Fred Winter is probably the target for him. We'll have a look at the betting in a moment. But first, we're going to have a look at the Scottish Triumph Hurdle. This was won by Affadil, beating eventually the Churchill Lad, who nabbed Fee de Roy on the line for second.
Yeah, Affadil getting the lead suited him. We saw him jam on very early at Taunton on his first run. The horse in front made a mistake at that hurdle. Then the Pink and Black is your favourite. That is bring back memories. Missed the hurdle, that hurdle on the back badly under Brian Hughes. And this race really quick and then the two out. And Affadil, I felt watching Harry Cobden's body language, he always felt he was in control of this race. He's a sharp horse, Affadil. Approved a lot jumping for his run at Taunton, even at the last, how slick he was over it and quickened really sharply. Interesting, Paul Nicholls brought him all the way to Musselburgh, obviously for better ground. Mm. It is his second run after a wind up. Will a really stiff track at Cheltenham suit him? Time will tell.
Yes, you wonder whether he might be more of an Aintree type on the basis of that, don't you?
Yeah, you could do, but he improved considerably from Taunton.
I was impressed by how much more switched on he was, and given it was steadily run, he wasn't able to stamp the authority on the race that I felt that he probably was capable of doing. Does that make sense?
I thought he only stamped as much authority as Harry Cobden allowed him to.
Okay. Do you like this horse?
I do. I liked it. I loved Harry's body language, was always telling me that he had loads underneath him.
Okay. Let's have a look at the JCB Triumph Hurdle Trial. This was run at Cheltenham on Trials Day, and it was won by Comfort Zone ahead of Scriptwriter. This is interesting.
Yeah, Jupiter de Geet very keen and bolts down the track early. Time he gets to the second hurdle, he's a long, long way in front. But to be fair, the others have caught up on him when they get around. Not caught up on him, but he's come back a good bit to them. By the time they get to the third hurdle, you can see them coming into shot and they're closing him down. Now, sixth hurdle, Scriptwriter makes a mistake in the red, yellow cap. There's Comfort Zone inside him. Scriptwriter misses this, and then Paddy Brennan and John O'Neill elect to go different routes. Paddy goes wide down the hill on Scriptwriter, and John just stays over behind Jupiter de Geet, but it's off the bend. Paddy is using diesel here, whereas John Joe's able to sit. I'm not sure there was as big an advantage out there maybe as Paddy thought there was, and it's whatever about coming wide off the bend and wide down the hill. Probably have to cut a bit off the corner and look, get back out here. Paddy gets to the stands rail, John Joe comes at him, but look, I think Milton Harris thought Paddy was probably in front soon enough, and from Paddy's body language in the last 100 yards you can see he thinks it too, because
yes,
he's disgusted with himself going to the line.
Well, he literally hangs his head, doesn't he?
He does, but you can see, like, he even realises he goes here, he's a neck in front, and then Comfort Zone starts to come at him, and halfway up, as Comfort Zone gets by him and Paddy knows he has nothing else to give, he's thinking, oh my God, you can see the frustration in his body language.
Yeah, just watch him with the yellow cap. Just there. Literally hanging his head.
Yeah, but like, yeah, everyone's going to make mistakes.
Yeah, of course.
But you have to realise you've made them. And he realised it before the rest was even over.
I make several every day. Count them in this show. Right, Comfort Zone. John Joe O'Neill had learnt plenty from the finale, hadn't he? When the horse saw too much daylight early, pulled too hard and was in front too soon. There he buried him and delivered him late.
Yeah, and he's improving. And was a good performance from Comfort Zone.
And Scriptwriter, you've already touched on. He could be better than that, couldn't he? If he gets a similar type ride.
He could, but Comfort Zone was well behind Lossie Mouth, so he has to be better.
He's surely improved a bit, you would think, wouldn't you?
Probably,
with racing.
I'd be thinking that Willie's Juvenile should be improving too.
Yeah, oh, I take that point. And both of them, I think, are horses that would like it not to be too deep, Comfort Zone and Scriptwriter, and would want a sort of a 2 mile race where there's emphasis on speed.
Yeah, exactly.
Should mention also Dixon Cove. She finished third. She was a close-up second behind Comfort Zone in the finale. She was close up there at the final hurdle, and you were wondering why wasn't she making up ground. Well, it turned out that she sustained quite a serious tendon injury. I was checking in with Meg Nichols this morning, and she says that the horse has managed to be saved to be a broodmare, which was good news because that wasn't necessarily a given. She wasn't going to be able to race again, but the surgery has been successful, so we wish her well. So that is good to hear. Right, let's have a look at the JCB Triumph Hurdle betting, shall we? Lossie Mouth 13-8. Blood Destiny, who we haven't mentioned, missed the DRF, head straight to Cheltenham, and Gallimarso at 4-1. So Willie Mullins has the top three in the market here.
Yeah, and look, all three of them. See, very easy to make a strong case for the three of them. Look, and we've talked about the other two. Blood Destiny, he was good at Fairy House, his last start. He was good at Cork. Looks a stare when he was a really good jumper.
I think the gap between Lossie Mouth and Gallimarso should be smaller, myself.
Are you putting Gallimarso up, so?
No. I'm not going to fall for that trap this time. You've already tempted me into that once this season. I'm not going to make that mistake again. Let's have a look at the Boodles Fred Winter Juvenile Handicap Market. I'm expecting to see Takao, yes, with Comfort Zone, 5-1 joint favourite at the top. Have you got any sneaky ones here?
No.
I'm sure you will have.
Does Willie want a Fred Winter?
Oh, don't ask me difficult questions.
Something fell out the last with me.
Oh, yes, Voix de Nuit.
Voix de Rêve.
Voix de Rêve, that's it, sorry, yeah. Wrong one.
Don't think he has. Mm. Saint Sam was second, was he? Top way?
Mm-hmm. Close but no cigar. Right, those are the juveniles. When you rejoin us after this break, we'll be looking at the chases.
Well, Tour is an interesting parallel because he wouldn't have been 100% for the Ryanair.
No, and he'd run into King George, so and he'd run in Ascot, Kempton, and it took him a long time to get over to King George. But like, we were working Vatour, looking for life, looking for spark, nothing happening. He's working terrible. I'm thinking, like, I'm going to ride Vlad Cernito in the Ryanair, I'm going to ride Jack and him to go a cup. Vatour's not even going to go to Cheltenham.
At Racing TV, 100% of our profits go back into racing. Thank you for supporting the sport that we all know and love.
So, Chasers, the obvious place to start, of course, the Irish Gold Cup and Galopin Deschamps' success. What did you make of this?
I was delighted. I thought it was a good performance from him. Competitive, well, ish race. Kenboy didn't go mad in front. Stackler was outside him, who's not a natural front runner. Galopin Deschamps, very brave at that fence, which was the fourth, and he's very good again at the fifth fence down the inside. But the big dog was travelling really well. Fury Road, Franco de Port, any second now. They're all close together. But Galopin settled really well. And which he had done the John Duncan, very brave at that fence away from the stance, which was 8, but at 9 he gets in close and pops it. He's able to switch on and switch off. That's a big addition for jumping, going 3 1/4 mile chasing. Fury Road gets up the Startler at the 12 fence, and so does the big dog get between them as they try to make this race more of a stamina contest. This is the last ditch. Kenboy is going pretty much as quick as he can. Paul jumps onto their heels. The big dog was travelling really well when he fell at the second last. Like, he's improved so much this season, even at his age. Peter Fahey must be delighted with him. But Davy Russell sent Fury Road to the front off the last bend and got running. Paul came at him on Galopin Deschamps. He drifts into Paul halfway down, and then Davy pulls him off. But Davy knows he's there, and that's the last time he pulls him off. But and he keeps going back across him all the way to the last. And I think what Fury Road running across, missing the last fence and going all the way to the far rail, probably flatters Statler in the end. But I thought Galopin Deschamps here, Lydia, when Paul gives him a flick behind the saddle and starts to ask him, he just started to go faster and faster, and I love the way he finished.
Yeah, I think he ends up being impressive in a Sedley Run race, which is quite, it's pretty good. I also think that 12 months ago, Fury Road doing that against him would have forced an error from Galopin Deschamps, I think. And it hasn't now.
No, he hasn't, but he's learned with all his runs, and that over-exuberance that he had this time last year is gone. But the pace is still there. Once or twice in that race when Paul switched him on, he came on it. And Paul then had the confidence to leave him behind the bridle and keep following the ones in front. I personally think himself and a Plutar are the classiest two horses in the Gold Cup. And I think they're a bit ahead of the rest in terms of class.
You said afterwards, I think he's got everything. That prompted Giants Causeway, one of our regular correspondents, to ask, you say that, you've ridden Denman, you've ridden Corto Star. I know it's early in Galopin Deschamps' career, and I'm not trying to compare him in terms of the achievements, but in terms of their qualities, what do you see that makes you say a statement like that in Galopin Deschamps, having got that
I
context?
I think he has everything as a staying chaser. Do I think he would win a Grade 1 2-mile chase like Corto Star did? I don't think so. Do I think he will be ever ridden to gallop and go like Denman was? I wouldn't think so either. I think he just has everything. He's able to. He has the stamina. I think he has plenty of pace for 3-mile chasing. I think he's a very good jumper. He can stand back. He can get in. I think he's learned so much through his career. And I think he's becoming a finished article.
What do you say to people who aren't that impressed with that form? Because I've met a few of them over the weekend at the DR.
I think brilliant, because it's everyone's opinion is what makes racing so bloody interesting.
Let's have a look at the Voodles Cheltenham Gold Cup betting, shall we? And Galopin de Show is the 11-8 favourite. Aplutar is 6-1. The two that Ruby say are the says is the classiest in the contest. Noble Yates, of course, is anti-post bet at, what was it, remind everybody?
66.
7-1 at the moment. So 23 remain in the Gold Cup. Three were taken out: Frodon, Lompresse and Monkfish. And that leads me nicely to the question from Lindsay.
Thanks, Lydia. Ruby, I know you don't really like talking about horses at willies unless they're up and running and going racing, but with Monkfish having come out and with the owners always saying it was going to be tight to get him to Cheltenham, what can you tell us about him? Has he had an actual setback, or is he just not coming on quickly enough?
It's just not coming along quickly enough. Mm. It's 5 weeks from last Tuesday when the forfeits were to the start of the Cheltenham Festival. And when you looked at where Monkfish was and how much work you could get into him in 5 weeks, the sums weren't adding up. And hopefully he might get to Punchestown, which is another 5 weeks after that. That's a more realistic timeline. And then you'd have to hope that the ground would be slow enough for him by then. So that's where he is. It's not a hold-up. I think he was seen on Monday
with the media there.
It's not a hold-up. It's just actually me do the maths. There's not enough time.
What is the obsession with? Well, it's not you alone. I'm just wondering, because he really seems to have caught people's imagination. What do you like?
Personally, I just adore him. He's massive, but he's so nimble.
Yeah.
And he's got the kindest face. He seems like a real dude. What's he like, Ruby?
He is. He's a big, gentle giant. But I think Nicky Henderson made him famous calling him fish cake.
Yeah. He really did. He really did. But also, I think, really talking about him like being a giraffe in the field, so like there'll be a load of horses that we just want with them.
But even when you look at him, he is so tall, but you'd be surprised actually how heavy he is, because he's really narrow and lean. Mm. But you'd be surprised actually what he weighs. He must have bone like timber.
Right, let's have a look at last week's poll. We asked you about, again, we went in again to ask which of the short price favourites, this time at the Dublin Racing Festival, have I got our fingers burnt in the trials meeting, is the most vulnerable. And collectively, we were all wrong. All of those didn't win. But we did think that, or you did think rather, that Galopin de Champ was the least vulnerable of those favourites. And that leads us to Blue Lord, who and his eclipse in the Dublin Chase by stable companion Gentleman Demi, with Danny Mullins on board again.
Yeah, look, this is a good, strongly run race. Dunvegan jumped out and went forward, and Gentleman Demi, up past the winning post, actually settled inside Dunvegan. Mm. He wasn't tearing away. Blue Lord was sat in third, so Royal and Fast or Slow. But Gentleman Demi's jumping there, half a length on Blue Lord, or best part of a length. Again, down the back, Blue Lord was reaching for the fifth, sixth. Gentleman Demi is very good, gets more ground on him. Very long, and then that one, this one here, Dunvegan and himself, they're always getting away from Blue Lord in the jumping stakes. Last ditch, even though just all those little bits add up, half lengths and lengths, and Danny had Paul on the back foot without realising it. Now, I'm not sure Blue Lord ever travelled or looked quite like the same horse he did at Christmas, but then if a horse puts up a career best, how many of them actually back it up the next time? I wonder, did Christmas leave its mark on Blue Lord, which for me was a long way a career best for him? And I think this fella's bounced back to maybe what he was last spring when he beat Edward Stone at Aintree. I think that was good race planning. Picked the weakest day of Edward Stone, was always going to be the last day. And he won that day, but he bounced back to solid form there. He's a 158, so are the third and fourth horses, but all 158s. And I just think maybe the big performance of Christmas left its mark on Blue Lord.
OK, I'm going to sit with Blue Lord for now because I know that Alex has a question about him.
Hi, Ruby. After Blue Lord's defeat at the weekend, do you still feel as if he may have the pace for a champion chase? Or if you were the owners, would you potentially take him up and trip to the Ryanair if something isn't 100% with Alaho?
Yeah, I suppose you keep the options open, and they will be. But what you saw at Christmas is what you know he's capable of. I don't think he reproduced that. Mm-hmm. I don't think at every stage of Christmas, Daryl Jacob was trying to slow Blue Lord down. At every stage last Sunday, Paul Townham was trying to make him go faster. I don't think there was that big a difference between the two races.
So you'd still be inclined to stick at the Queen Mother Champion Chase distance?
I would have said in November when we were in Clonmel that Blue Lord was a 2.5 miler. But when I watched him at Christmas, the way he travelled, I was thinking, pooh, he could be a runner in an open champion chase.
What are you hoping for? What do you think,
well,
Alex?
My anti-post bet is on the champion chase, but obviously I know he's won over 2.5 before, so it's fine. I can back him in the turners if he does turn up. So
I was nosy before. What price?
8-1
8-1
So okay. It's not too bad.
Okay. I'm glad everyone's being so open about this. You can just say, don't be so nosy, Lydia. You referred...
You can.
He does, frequently. You mentioned the eclipse of Edward Stone by a gentleman to me at Aintree last time. This was much... There was much chat about this. How do you see these two now, bearing this in mind?
Yeah, I think Aintree, like Punchestown Farm, can often be... not false, but you can get different results. Like Edward Stone had danced every dance last winter as a novice, and he'd won the Arkle and been very good at it. Was he entitled to slightly underperform at Aintree? I think he was. Gentleman to Me had come a much quieter road and peaked at Aintree. So look, it'll be interesting to see how they get on the champion chase, but Gentleman to Me booked his place in a champion chase that, again, like a so many race, it was going to be a one horse race 3 months ago that now looks an absolute belter.
That's the great thing that the Dublin Racing Festival has done this season. Actually, it's made so many more races more competitive, more exciting, rather than decide them in February, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, but I think it probably has done for a long time. When those meetings were two Sundays, everyone goes on about the Dublin Racing Festival as if the races were never there in the past. They've always been there. They were just run a fortnight apart, and they provided a lot of pointers towards Cheltenham. They were never trials for Cheltenham. They were always big individual races that were worth winning, and they still are. They're pointers, whereas there's plenty of trials at different meetings. They're not trials.
Marketing people across the country, head in hands, instead of trying to, don't spoil the magic, don't push them together, call it a festival. Ooh.
Geniuses.
I mean, honestly, head in hands they are. Right, Alan King had this to say about Edwardstone. He was lame for most of last week. He bruised a foot. It took 5 to 6 days to get him sound after being narrowly beaten by Editor De Geet in the rescheduled Clarence House. The x-rays are clear. It's not a concern. Ruby, do you just want to reprise your reaction when I said that this should be included in the show?
It's not news. There's nothing wrong with him. He had a couple of days off after he ran with a sore foot. Maybe if you wanted a price, probably suited you to see that as news.
So from your perspective, that's just what happens and nobody should be
bothered. It's of no relevance. So if that was 10 days before Cheltenham, in the middle of his Cheltenham prep, I would say, yeah, it's news. But at this stage, where it's only in his recovery time after the Clarence House, I would consider it irrelevant.
OK. What's Alan King getting paid for then, for his column, if he's filling it with non-news?
He could. Fair play to him.
I knew he'd say that as well. Let's have a look at the betting for the Betway Queen Mother Champion Chase. 3 came out in the forfeits, 11 remain. Amarillo, Sky, Dunvegan and So Royals were the ones that exited. And I'm going to ask for a bit of audience participation here, a show of hands. Who is the likeliest winner of the Champion Chase? Hands up for A, Edwardstone. 1 vote from Edwardstone.
2.
2. Oh, sorry, 2 votes for Edwardstone, 1 over there. B, Energumen. Ooh. Mm. Why?
Because each and every one of them have an anti-post.
Is that true? Not if it's true. Yeah, it's true. Right.
All 5. See? So there's no such thing as an unbiased vote, even when they're looking you in the eye.
That's terrible. See, Gentleman to Me? 1. Right, OK. D, Editor De Geet? 1. And that's it. That's everybody voted now, isn't it? Anyone want to offer me an E in the back of the room? Anyone? No? Okay.
None of the above.
Okay, so the argument for Energumen, what did you all make of him? Anyone who wants to tell me, what did you all make of him in his defeat in the Clarence House? But if you put your hand up, who wants to talk? Go on. Here we are. Go on, Lily. Lily, with the microphone, is going to join us here.
Well, it was obviously very disappointing. And, you know, backing him for the Champion Chase, you want him to go in easily. But I think the biggest thing for me is comments made by Willie. And I watched an interview...
What, the white fences?
No, not the white fences.
Good.
And I watched I think it was a Dublin Racing Festival, and after Gentleman to Me won, they said to Willie, is he now, do you see him as the main Champion Chase? Straight away, no, Energumen is still number one bloke on the block. So I think for me that speaks wonders, and I think, you know, Willie's the right man to get him back where he should be, and I think he wins. Simple.
Does the man speak sense?
Him or Willie?
Him on this occasion. We'll come back to Willie.
Yeah, Yeah, look, probably, yeah, possibly. But I still think, looking at the Clarence House, that Edwardstone sets the standard.
Me too. Yeah, I'm afraid I'm with Edwardstone. Those voters for Edwardstone. Right, let's have a look at the Ryanair Chase betting. 20 remain in this. 7 were taken out. Notably, Gallop Endershom. I just mentioned that because many people still think he won't stay the Gold Cup trip. It's possible, I suppose, that Autant Colour could be supplemented to this.
Yeah, possible. I was slagging Casey the other morning. He said, yeah, maybe. Don't know.
That doesn't sound like a ringing endorsement, does it?
Didn't to me, anyway.
No. But Alaho is the 10-11 favourite. And we have a report from the media trip at Willie Mullins's on Monday. And he said, and I quote, "I'm very happy with Alaho. He's doing some fast work." He suggested he was ahead of Monkfish in his recovery for, hopefully, plans later in the season, and Classical Dream. He was very positive about Alaho and his state of readiness.
Yeah, look, I think he made a plan a long time ago that he wasn't going to be ready, or if he was going to have him ready for the Kinloch Bray, it wouldn't be ready enough to take the run and could set him backwards rather than bring him forward. So they scratched that from early, and his prep has been geared at on the Thursday at Cheltenham's, the 18th, or not the 17th, is it 16th? So I think it's been working back from there for a long time, so I think he's hitting all the targets.
He's been fabulous in two Ryanairs now. You expressed some concerns about not getting a prep into him. Do you still feel that way?
Yeah, you'd have to. It's mileage in the tank, whatever way you look at it. And however much homework you can do, it's pushing those horses to that, not the limit, but almost to it, that they get in a race that brings horses forward. And he always seemed like one that improved for that.
We've got two important chases at Newbury this weekend, and we've got the declarations for them. Hot off the press. This is the Denman Chase over 2 miles, 7.5 furlongs, and it features Eldorado Allen, who I think will enjoy this particular target. Hitman's there after his disappointment in the King George. Kalashnikov, who shaped okay over Christmas after returning from a long absence. Let's move on to the Game Spirit on the same card. And that features Grenatine, and that would be the key runner, really, there. Harry Cobden on board. Nambi Sivla also there. And the novice Mortlach. Right. Okay. Let's talk novice chases next, shall we? And we'll begin with the Ladbrook novice chase, formerly the Flowgas. A really impressive performance from Mighty Potter.
Yeah, Mighty Potter versus Willie Mullins. And he jumped really well. Second fence, he pushed forward, and that forced James de Burley into an error. The third fence, you can see how far back I am. Maximus already is. Fifth fence, they were all really good away from the stands. And at the next fence, Davey asks him a question, but Mighty Potter changes his mind and shows you that he knows how to get out of it. Never mind novices making mistakes. Down the back at the 8th fence, he jumps past Kilcrut, but he gets in close, and at the 9th he lands up beside Gaillard de Menil with a brilliant jump at the second last ditch. Again at the 13th second last fence, brilliant jump, gets by Gaillard de Menil, and he was always going to win from here. Quickens off the bend, he's good and clever at the last. Now he does hold his head slightly to the left if you want to find a reason to crab him. I'm not. He didn't blow me away at Down Royal. I was really impressed with him in Leopardstown. I thought he's jumping, everything about him. I'd say he's a very, very good racehorse.
This is what I mean. I remember the Supreme run last year, and it was nagging in the back of my mind, and it made me be far too negative about what my eyes were telling me. And then when I went back and looked over this race, I just got more and more impressed, just the way he came away from the rest of the field. I'm inclined to be relatively positive about Gaillard de Menil. The drop back by 3 furlongs in trip was never going to suit him, and he presumably would be heading towards the National Hunt
Chase. He'd have to step up, yeah. He looked a bit slow. I probably would have liked to see him, though, show a bit more pace. I think that was a steadily enough run race.
It was. But he was, you know, not knocked about once held, and, you know, Adam Lee Chosen got in his way at the last. I think there are some reasons to think that he ran okay. Adam Lee Chosen for handicaps at Ferry House or Punchestown, do you think?
Yeah, he's backed up his run at Limerick where he's behind Jerry Calam, and he's definitely gone. He's improving.
This was a time that compared particularly well to the Goffer, which won the handicap over the same course and distance as Stable Companion to Mighty Potter. Good run from the Goffer. They were indicating he might go up in trip, maybe something like the Ultima for him.
Yeah, he could, but he got a really good ride as well. Big field handicap down the inside, produced going to the last. He got a brilliant ride to win the Goffer from Davy Russell. And the Ultima, yeah, back up in trip would suit him.
Yeah. Turner's betting then. And now I'm a believer about Mighty Potter at the top there at 5-2. El Fabiolo is second in there at 2-1. I keep putting in an extra syllable. El Fabiolo, Lydia. Appreciate It, who might end up here, is 9-2. Banbridge Ditto, 5-1 and Sir Gerhard 7-1. Before we talk about the Irish Arkle, though, we're going to have a look at the Scilly Isles. And this was also won by Gordon Elliott with Jerry Colomb, ridden by Jordan Gainford, maintained his unbeaten record.
Yeah, five runners and they all jumped out together and kind of bounced down over the three railway fences almost in the line. Balco Costal at the last one gets to the front under Nico de Bonneville. And they went a decent enough gallop from there. Got up down the hill away from the stands to the fence, down the hill, a good jump from Jerry Collan put him up beside Mon Morale when Balco Costal went left. Nine fence, jumps himself to the front, brave at that ditch, gets tight at the next one and Balco Costal jumps back in front of him. Now at the railways, second time round, he's very long at the middle one, and as you get longer at the railways, the last one can often be too long, and it is, and Jerry Collan and Jordan sends him here, changes his mind, gets into it and gets up and out and over it. Really clever for a novice, never touched a twig with his front legs. Balco Costal looks to be gone from him then, away from the pond fence. Thunder Rock is coming, but Jordan Gainford switches outside. Second last, he starts to get a rally, jumps the last and outstays them from their home. Gordon has spoken about him going up in trip to the Brown Advisory, and he looks tailor-made for it. It doesn't look real deep, that Brown Advisory, but this horse has run six times now, won every time, never blown you away. Always a good sign. He just does enough and just keeps winning, and that's the most important part.
Yeah, something very likable about him. Maybe something like the manifesto with an emphasis on speed for Balco Costal, the running up, so maybe Aintree. 9-4 favourite, Jerry Colomb, for this. The real whacker is 9-2. Time Hill there is at 11-2. We should briefly mention City Chief won the Towton with a very forward ride. That was from James Bowen, and we can have a look at the National Hunt Chase betting. Gaillard de Manie, as I mentioned earlier, is still the favourite, and City Chief there at 7-1 won the Towton.
Yeah, I liked it. It was good performance. Ballygriffin Boys, City's Chief, he was good and brave. He was in front a long way from home. James Bowen kept the revs up on him all the way. Brilliant jump at the fourth last, grabbed at the third last, but he looked a strong stayer, City Chief, and a horse that I had written off after watching him in Exeter. Definitely came back on my radar when he won the Towton.
Yeah, it was a much better jumping performance. Ballygriffin Cottage, the disappointment of that race, not jumping well, pulled up, and it emerged that he'd broken a blood vessel. Right, now, my favourite race, as it turned out, it was going to be going into it, and coming out of the Dublin Racing Festival, it still was. It was the Irish Arkle. My goodness, what a good race this was.
And they all went forward. Dicer Dynamo ultimately set the target, or set the pace. But you see Field Or, the second fence, Davy Russell, he's nudging him along already. Into the back straight, and Dicer Dynamo is rocking. Visionary and Saint Roy, Field Or, they were first, second and third in the Grade 1 at Christmas. They're the last three horses there. Look at the spread on them. Il Fabiola's jumping got better as it went on. Field Or unseated, or Saint Roy at the fifth. Sixth fence now, Flame Bearer in the red and white. He launches at this stage and doesn't quite get there. The next fence, Dysart Dynamo and Il Fabiola both meted really long and are really quick at it. I was half happy with Appreciate at this stage, but not for much longer. Next fence, Il Fabiola hits it. Darrell goes to go on, he puts down, but gets himself out of it. But straight away I'm thinking, oh, don't know how much Paul has left. Good jump at the last ditch from Appreciate and put him on Il Fabiolo's tail. But at the second last, the jumps are the other way. Dysart Dynamo and Il Fabiola fly it. Appreciate it gets in deep and he can't pull them back. Now Bambridge runs on and he's going to miss the last fence under JJ Slevin, but they had gone hard, they'd gone at it, and Il Fabiola, to be fair to him, he does really well to keep it up. Half pricks his ears going to the last fence, jumps it well, and keeps going to the line. Appreciated falls, Dysart Dynamo falls, Bambridge runs on, but I thought that Il Fabiola definitely put himself in the picture to take on John Bond, and I think make John Bond go.
More, you think John Bond would what?
I think he'll make John Bond go.
Right, yeah, right, okay. But so do I. Let's have a look at the betting. I think he should be favourite on the basis of this performance. At the moment now, as we speak, El Fabiolo has the strongest form over 2 miles amongst the novices. Surely.
Yeah, I would think so too, but you'll see John Bonn on Saturday and takes on the horse of Moore's. Is he running?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, I thought that... See what John Bonn does to him at the weekend.
We can have a look at the Kingmaker decks for you. There they are. Haddock's Dezebo of Gary Moores is there, and John Bonn as well. Bass Rock as well, who we liked earlier in the season. I'm not sure we thought he would be a 2 mile chaser against the calibre of John Bonn, though.
No, probably not. But look, that'll be an interesting race too, and John Bonn has done nothing wrong. But I do think Il Fabiolo, when you look through the back form, I thought he was a little unlucky behind him at Aintree last year.
Yeah, I'm not quite
you
so
didn't.
Sure. No, I didn't. Because he got his head in front and John Bonn battled
back.
Yeah, and
you put me off Il Fabiolo, and that's why I was off him last week listening to that statement.
You should always have your own mind, Ruby.
I didn't think
you were easily talked off a position, but clearly you are.
You did. Talk me out of it.
I wonder whether the jumping might be the difference between the two of them. I feel that John Bond's the neater jumper, even though I think El Fabiola's got the better
form. And obviously then the handicap chase, he had final orders of Gavin Cromwells, who has gone from... What, he won a handicap hurdle off 96. He's still rated 102 over hurdles. Won his fifth chase at, went from 2.7, 3 miles. A couple of them at 2 miles. He won off 140 last week and he's still a novice.
Yeah, he was almost 10 seconds slower time overall. I didn't feel it was the deepest 2 mile handicap
chase. No, 2 mile handicaps in Ireland probably aren't.
But he is very progressive and I think he's probably earned his place there. And Gavin Acko, his stable companion, of course, as we mentioned.
Yeah, and you have to remember what Gavin Cromwell did with a certain handicapper over hurdles a couple of years ago, being Flooring Porter.
Yeah, absolutely. All hail to that. But you think the Irish Arkle has sent Banbridge an appreciator up in trip for the...
I would, yeah. You would definitely have to think so.
And Dysart Dynamo knows no other way. I love the way he blows races apart, but...
But he's going to do that, so he's going to line up in the 2 mile. But look, there's another race at Cheltenham Festival. It shouldn't be there. That's going to be a great race.
You can't start an argument with that little to go towards
start
the
an
end
argument.
Of the show.
I could start an argument in an empty room.
So could I. We're quite a pair. Right, we're coming to the end of our On The Road show here of Road to Cheltenham. First of all, I need to thank our live audience. Thank you so much for attending. We really appreciate it. We hope you've enjoyed yourself. Thanks for your company. Thank you, Ruby.
Cheers, idiot.
Thank you as well for watching. We'll see you soon.
Paddy Power, sponsors of the Road to Cheltenham.